Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Thanks, yo.
What's up, guys, and welcome back to the podcast. I'm Frankie.
And I'm Alex.
And together we are FNA Van Life.
This is the podcast where every week we bring you news from the nomadic community or interviews with other nomads so that you can know what it's really like to live life on the road.
And just like every single week, we have a banger again this week. This one is really more about finance.
Yeah, I feel like everybody's always wondering how to make money on the road and how to make full-time van life a reality. So this is going to be a really interesting conversation with Tim and Carmen.
And I don't think that you have to be a nomad even for this one. Like, this is one that anybody could take this financial decision and this financial planning and utilize it in their own life and just better yourselves. I know that Alex and I have, and it's definitely bettered us for our future. We're utilizing this plan, this opportunity to hopefully make it to where it's making us a lot more money down the road since we are making some type of money through our business right now. So we don't need the money at the moment. So just like reinvesting it as dividends, I think is a great idea for us at the moment.
Yeah. But so they're going to explain all about that. And we talked about health. We talked about all things. There have been nomads themselves. So this is a really interesting conversation. But first, I wanted to give a huge shout out to our commenter of the week. This is a really great review. And if you love the podcast, be sure to drop a review wherever you're listening, whatever platform. So this review says, "How have I not found this podcast before? Just started binging this podcast on my way to Banff in our van. Yay for Canadian van lifers. Whoop,
whoop. What? That's dope.
We are coming up on our 1 year anniversary since moving in full time, and we are always looking for more great van life content to listen to as we drive. Anyways, I totally laughed out loud when Frankie mentioned wishing he could start from zero on the build. As a carpenter, I totally hear you and would always, 1,000 times over, build from scratch rather than renovating."
Yeah, it makes so much more sense to build from scratch. I mean, you know, right now we're working with what somebody else has already done, and it's been done, you know, over 30 years ago, actually. So, you know, working with what has been up for 30 years is kind of hard because you don't know what type of damage that stuff has taken. You know, I mean, luckily we've been really fortunate to have a rig that has been kind of well put together, I would say, and hasn't had much damage inside. So yeah, we're getting lucky there, but it is much, much harder when you don't know where to land things.
Mm-hmm. So the review ends by saying, "Love your podcast. You two are so much fun. Can't wait to check out your YouTube channel. Cheers from Becca and Joel."
Ah, Becca and Joel, that's amazing. Thank you so much. We appreciate the fact that you've been listening to the podcast. Hey, hit us up. You know, maybe we can meet up sometime. I would love to do some snowboarding this winter in Canada and maybe the States. I don't know if you guys are into that stuff, but I feel like being Canadian, you almost have to be.
I don't know if that's true. I know a lot of Canadians who really don't enjoy winter, but
yeah, but skiing and or snowboarding, I feel like, is like a thing up here.
I mean, it's a thing for a lot of people, but that's just like saying everybody who lives in Colorado must ski or snowboard.
I mean, is it like everybody that lives in Canada plays hockey?
That's also not true.
No, Alex, come on. Tell us the truth. You've been playing hockey for a long time.
I can't even hardly skate. I'm like a Bambi on skates. I'm not kidding.
I know. I believe it. Actually, you know what? Once that baby comes out, we're gonna get you on skates. I got to see this.
Yeah, we're going to have to take some lessons or something.
It will kind of be perfect timing, too, because it will be right around when, you know, the winter is coming and the ice will stop. Oh, we could probably skate right here, right on the lake.
There you go.
On the bay.
So, update from the road. We are not on the road. We are currently renovating and less than 30 days to my due date.
Yes. Yeah, I'm so excited for this. Are you, you ready to bring that little baby into the world?
I am. I don't know. I'm not ready. I feel like I'm, like, people have started asking me, like, "Oh, you're probably feeling like you just want to get it out. Like, you just want it to be over." I've been fine being pregnant. I've got no problems being pregnant. I feel really great. There's nothing that I'm like, oh my gosh, I need this baby out, you know? And I feel like that's kind of what people are asking. Like, are you ready to like get it out? And I'm like, no, I'm like, I'm happy. The baby's happy. We're comfy. Like, yeah, sure. Sometimes it's a little bit uncomfortable, but like, overall, this has been a very great pregnancy.
Yeah, I mean, just from an outside perspective, everything that I've seen Alex go through, it's been fairly easy considering like what other people have told us about their pregnancies. So I'm just really grateful that Alex has had it so easy. And hopefully the birth is as easy, too. And I don't want Alex to jump onto the board of like, you know, the bandwagon of like, all right, that was easy. Let's have another one. I'm like, calm down, calm down. I really hope it stays easy, though.
Yeah, no, I think it's all going to be good. So we've definitely got a lot going on between trying to finish our van build. We're trying to get that pinned in the next 30 days so that, you know, the majority of 95 to 99 to 100% of it. Because we know that when the baby comes, we're not going to have time to spend on renovating all day. Like literally, we get up in the morning, we do a little bit of computer work, have breakfast, and then head over to the van and then work all day long. So that's obviously not going to be a reasonable schedule when we have a newborn floating around too.
And I'm just thinking like I'm tired right now without the baby here. Like, I can only imagine when the baby first comes and, like, how much you have to do in the very beginning. Because, like, every 2 hours you have to feed the baby. Every hour the baby might be waking up and crying. You know what I mean? Like, you just don't know what type of baby you're going to get. You know, you hope for the best and prepare for the worst, I guess, is what the saying is. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it just, you don't know what you're going to get. So you have to take the sleep while you can get it now. And get the projects done that you could get done that way for that like first 3 months. Like you're just able to be there for the child, I think, fully.
Yeah. You know? And also be like a zombie is what, what I'm expecting.
Yeah, me too. I think that we could handle it together if we, you know, play our cards right. And, you know, we invest in ourselves and, you know, making sure that the other person is getting enough quality sleep. You know, it's like making sure that you're putting your money in the right places, mm-hmm. you know, but we're putting our priorities in the right places.
So speaking of that, let's get into this conversation with Tim and Carmen. I think you guys are really going to like this. They've actually been Patreons of ours for years now. Mm-hmm. We've been communicating with them back and forth for a really long time. They're awesome people. This is kind of more like a chat between friends because we've definitely like had phone calls with them before and chatted with them and we're texting with them all the time. So really excited for this new program for them to be launching. And we hope that you guys get some benefit out of this conversation.
Yeah. One of the things that I love about this conversation is they truly are genuinely themselves. Like, you know, just how you guys feel about us, you're totally going to feel the same way about them. All right, let's jump into this.
Let's talk about the van and things like that first, because that's kind of how you...
The van came after the trip. Well,
so what happened was I was like a workaholic. I was literally working at the government full-time and for my dad full-time. So I literally had no time off. And he comes along and he's just like, I don't like working.
I don't like doing this, so we're not going to do that.
So he was working at the Turnpike, but he got sick there. And I was like, fine. I was like, I'm making like $90,000 a year. I was like, go ahead and just, you know, till you get better. I really don't care. And so he did that. And then I think you got bored and decided like, we should go camping. We should go hiking. We should go wherever. And the first like big trip we took away was out to Ohio and what is it? Hocking Hills.
Yeah. Hocking Hills State
Park. We went in January because my dad doesn't work in the wintertime, right? For the most part. So like that was usually when we could take trips. So we go out there and we're hiking along. We're like 3 miles from the car and it's like two tiers, right? And it's icy. So I'm like,
preface this that homie isn't graceful. Okay.
I'm like a mountain goat, and Tim is just like,
clutzy. I'm the opposite of a goat.
Like, he's so on a big layer surrounding. So, like, there's like a two tier thing. I know, right? Right. So I'm like, okay, this is ice, right? I don't want to fall off this like 20 foot drop over here. So I grab like a tree root and I bop down and I keep going. All of a sudden, I turn around because I didn't hear Tim. I like look, and Tim just like shoots off the side. He like, Superman freaking launches and I'm just like, oh, this could be bad. I'm like, what the hell is going on? So I'm sitting here watching and I'm just like looking down, looking up, because you know how stuff slows down when you're in like a crisis moment. And I'm just like, it's complete ice on the creek. And I'm just like, I hope to God that water is not deep. He smacks, his knees hit. And he like comes up and he like, you know how when you hit cold water, he was like, comes up and he's like freaking out at that point. And I just started laughing my ass off. And he's just like, I could die down here, you know, straight up panic. I had like no sympathy whatsoever. And I'm just looking at him and I'm just like, really, really?
Well, the first thing whenever you talk to anybody that's had like, quote, a near-death experience is that they see the life flash before their eyes. And that's partially true, but time moves so slowly. Like I thought, felt I was in the air for like 35, 40 seconds. That's how slow time was moving. I was just like, huh, this isn't going to be good. And it wasn't.
It wasn't.
And I'm just like, he's like, how do I get up there? I'm like, I don't know. You got yourself down there. Figure it out. So I'm sitting here like waiting for him to figure out how to get up here. Because like, I was the only person that had clothes. We're 3 miles from the car. It's 8 degrees with like 6 inches of snow on the ground. And I was like, we have to have at least one set of clothes. And at this point, I think he was like, how fat were you?
250.
He was a pretty big boy. And I was like, I'm like 5 foot. I was like maybe 135 pounds. And I had like just 2 layers of sweat clothes on. So I ended up having to strip him down out of his jeans. Like that's how inexperienced we were. He's like wearing jeans to hike in the winter. But I like had to strip him out of everything. I like stuck him in my sweat clothes and my sweatshirt, and he literally looked like this little like jacked up penguin. So he's like running in front of me, because I was like, you need to run to keep your blood flowing. I was like, we got to get back to a road to hopefully get like hitchhike with somebody. Fortunately, some ranger comes along. We go back to the thing, and then we heated up in the lodge and stuff. We were the only people there. They brought a heater out for us, and then I asked him the question. I'm sitting here like, I really want to finish this hike, but am I that much of an asshole if I like tell him not to, even though he was just quote unquote dying from cold? I was like, I guess I'll just ask and not be an asshole. So he's like, of course we're going back. And I was like, yes, thank God. So we're like, we go on this trail that we were missing. And of course it's like under construction. There's like hammers and nails and stuff dropping. And I was just like, oh my God, this is the most ridiculous trip ever. So we got to where we were going at my brother's aunt's house or cousin or whatever, my brother's fiance's parents. And Tim like took 2 hours of thought in the bathtub, like hours and hours later.
Yeah, my legs were like a deep shade of purple.
Oh my God.
Interesting.
I don't know if that's normal.
That's probably hypothermia.
So. Yeah, he's had a couple close scares. Like,
so that was our first.
That was the first.
That
one.
Was our first camping trip. You'd think, okay, we're probably
just camping.
We're not going to do that anymore.
But you were like, let's double down.
Most people are like, I'm done.
I don't remember how much time went by, but then we were like, okay, so this is actually fun going on these adventures and trips. Like, I love risk and adrenaline, and like, I love adventure. And he's never said no. So that's kind of been like, okay, I can come up with all these crazy concoctions, because I'm like, let's see if we can go here in the dark with flashlights, after hours, stuff's closed, like go on these sketchy paths, stuff's closed. Hilarious. So the next one, we actually planned a longer trip, because I actually had a lot of time saved up from the government where I wasn't using it. So we went down to the Great Smoky
Mountains. There's a point to this.
Yeah, this is how we got into the van thing. So with that trip, we were driving my mom's like $1,300 hoopty Cavalier that Tim picked up off some guy that needed to pay the mortgage
He had to pay his rent for the month, so he got his car for like $1,200 or something like that.
I was like, whatever.
It doesn't concern me what he did next month.
So we had that. We drove down. We were planning to actually camp at this point, and middle of winter, January again, because we like to go places where people are not like crowded, packed, and the Smokies is like the most traveled national park, I think, in the country. So we went during winter again. I had to do that because my dad and the work thing. And the first day, our goal was to go up to Clingman's Dome and like camp like slightly down off the thing from there. Well, that was about the time that Chimney Tops had done that burn, the whole top of that mountain burned down. So what happened was we actually got on there, but we weren't going up Chimney Tops. And I thought the close trail signs were for that part of the hike. So we went the other direction instead of going up the road that goes up to Clingman's Dome. That's closed in the wintertime because of snow and ice and stuff. So when we hiked up that, I guess that trail was also closed. There was this massive washout. So we're in like 6-8 inches of water in the cold. And I had bought waterproof socks, which actually are pretty cool if you keep them on. But we get up there. It's like 13 miles up. We got up there and it was about an hour before nighttime. And I'm starting to set stuff up. And I turn around and Tim has his feet completely out. And I was like, oh my God, are we gonna have another repeat of like hypothermia again? And I'm sitting here and I don't like to force anybody to do anything. Are. So I'm like, hey Tim, I really do think going back might be a good option, even though logistically it sounded crazy because we were 7 miles down the road to the main road, but then further from the car. And we didn't want to drive, like, hike back through the woods. We could have just taken the roads. But again, like, 6 inches of snow was on the freaking ground. Tim's up here doing whatever. And I'm just like, all right, I'm going to set up to pretend like we're going to stay here. If he decides to change his mind, we'll figure it out from there. So he sits around for like a hot hour. And then he's like, yeah, I think we need to leave. It was like right after sunset. I'm just like, oh my God. So then we hike our way down and we're just like, oh my God, how are we going to find out how to get back to the car? I was like, I don't know if there's anybody even driving through here to like hitchhike, right? So fortunately for us, somehow some two dudes like came up behind us as we're like hiking down. And we're like, hey, can we grab a ride with you guys like down the road to our car? And they were like, absolutely. So we got back to the car, got a hotel. And then we actually lucked out. We probably would have died, to be honest, because a huge snowstorm came in. We would have been trapped and stranded on the mountain in like probably another foot of snow. So again, somehow he is the luckiest person in the world. Like he just like falls into wet creeks and comes out smelling like a rose. So we ended up staying at a hotel for 2 nights to get him time to thaw out and do the whole breakfast thing. I thought 2 was better than 1. And then we just were like, okay, camping's probably not a good idea. Why don't we just try to sleep in the car with like our blow up pads? We just like flipped the back seats down and we were like sleeping, and that worked for the next like 4 or 5 days that we were there. And that was kind of the start of our whole, like, we can do a lot more trips and save a lot more money by just sleeping in our vehicle. So that was how that started. And then I think he started looking into the whole van life.
Well, I started like researching how to travel in your car. Mm-hmm. And then, inevitably, everything pointed me back to van life. I was like, oh, let me check this out. So I started, like, researching. I started watching YouTube videos about van life. I think that's where I came across your guys' YouTube channel. And I subscribed and was watching. I was like, okay, so van life seems to be the answer to what I'm looking for, to travel as much as possible on the cheap for the most part. It's relatively inexpensive. Mm-hmm. So then I bought a van, or I was searching through a Facebook Marketplace and Craigslist and all that for a van, and finally found one. I want to say 2018, at the end of 2018, I finally found one, and we bought it in 2018 or 2019.
I think it was literally the very beginning of 2019. We got it like right before
van. Yeah, we bought it like February of 2019, right before COVID and all that crap happened, where the van prices like quadrupled. But I bet that guy's really mad. He sold it to us for like $6,000. He could have got like $12,000 had he waited another month.
Like, even though it had 200,000 miles on it, the guy was a mechanic, and and I actually have a pretty good like mechanic background because a couple of my exes are mechanics. So he was talking about how he replaced like all the normal wear and tears between the transition and the engine and like all this other stuff. So, and it drives, it sounds really good. The only problem is that it has some rust because we're in the Northeast.
Yeah.
And it just sucks.
What kind of van is it? Can you tell everybody?
Chevy Express, 1500 Chevy Express.
Yeah, it's a V8 Chevy Express.
It's one of those, it's like the passenger one that has all the windows on the sides. We actually liked all the windows.
It has all the trim and all that, like the TV in it, and like it has the really big captain's chairs and everything. It's super comfortable.
But the thing is, like, this was part of our plan. Like, we had actually started, I was so afraid of like launching and then having to come back to work after getting that taste of freedom, after being so repressed my whole life and having to work my whole life. And so I was like, really, really, really like, we have to figure the financial aspect out and figure out how to have enough money to have this like.
And I think that's a huge part that a lot of people, I don't want to say like ignore, but they like overlook prior to going into it, is the longevity and the durability of how are you going to pay for it once you're out there. Like going on vacation out in the van is not
the same
that hard as affording it.
Well, yeah, and I would say that, you know, the way that you guys did it would find the cheaper van that was already kind of pre-built at the same time too, saved you a lot of money in a sense. And also, like, a lot of the people that are doing it, since you have the imagery of, you know, what van life is today compared to what it used to be, in the sense of like getting a really budget styled rig, just throwing a bed in it and kind of traveling as you go.
Whereas now it feels like you almost need an $80,000 Mercedes with a $100,000 bill.
And so, like, these people are putting themselves in a
deficit. In a full
sense of, I'm going to travel for a long time. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, they don't have the financials to cover the van payment that month. And, you know, and then on top of that, you know, the fixes that are going to come up, you know, whether it's on the vehicle itself or on the build that they just built out.
Yes. And we were really intentional with how we did it. Like, we did not like the idea of having plumbing in our van because of the smell. I hate cleaning. Like, I absolutely despise cleaning. And I just was like, let's keep this simple. Let's keep this easy. Let's keep this portable. I was like, I would rather do that. And I was like, and honestly, how often are you washing dishes?
Yeah.
And I was like, there has to be another way, especially if you're trying to conserve water, you're trying to do this. So like our recommendation for people who don't know if they're going to love it, like that was the other thing that we did. We decided to do a crap ton of traveling in 2019 to make sure that we were in the right mindset and in the right skill set. So like one of the examples is we literally flew to Maui. We got super discounted tickets. I actually brought my mom because my girlfriend was having like her wedding there or something. Even though we didn't only saw her for like maybe 2 hours during the whole 2 weeks we were there. But I wanted to go for 2 weeks to maximize everything because I am like, I want to see everything as much as possible. I don't want to just sit around, lay on the beach. Like we're not that, I'm not that kind of person. And I think it's cool he's not either. And I was like, if my mom is annoying, I can like pawn her off on the people that are like here. I was like, so I think that I have like an out. It's not, my mom's always wanted to go to Hawaii. And I was like, okay, here's the opportunity. So I looked at everything. I was like, how do we do stuff on the cheap? I am all about spending money on the experiences, but not on where to sleep. I think the rates were like $200 to $300 a night. We camped the entire time and like stealth camped. We spent $39 total on sleeping for 2 weeks.
Nice job. And
that was only because I wanted to actually sleep at the Black Beach. So we did 2 nights there. And actually I figured out how we could have got around that now being there and knowing how to navigate that whole thing. But I bought like, we rented a really old vehicle to blend in with the locals to easier hide because all the travelers have those new Mustangs and stuff. So it's like, I put a lot of thought and I had like, you should see the maps that I make. It's insane. I have like all these like drop points and I'm like, all right, so we're here. The one place that we thought we would be able to camp ended up being like a sacred burial ground. So I was like, all right, that one's out. I was like, so we have to like, you know, roll with the punches. So like, I like to do a lot of planning, but I definitely modify and like, I guess tactically like navigate as we go about things.
Isn't that the same year that we literally flew into Juneau?
I was just gonna say the other one
with our backpack on, we just walked across the street and camped.
We literally didn't get a rental car. We didn't get any place to stay. We literally flew there, got off the plane, walked into the woods and just like set up camp.
Woke up the next morning and I was taking my morning pee, drinking my morning Coke. I used to drink Coke back at the time. I look around, and there's these huge cranes. It was like a construction zone. They were tearing down trees and everything.
So the bus system was actually pretty decent there. So we like rolled into downtown because we wanted to go to Mendenhall Glacier, which funny story, didn't end up actually happening the way we wanted it to. We ended up getting rescued off the mountain by like a local climbing group.
Yeah, volunteer climbing group, yeah.
Because I apparently can't follow trail markers and he was mad that I was like up his butt when we were coming down the hill because I like to like make it a game to see as far as I can go without seeing. He was like, get away from behind me. Get away. Just go in front of me. Just go in front of me. Well, I'm like, are you sure?
Who likes people walking 3 feet behind them? Just get in front of me. I'll catch up.
He's so slow when he goes downhill. And like, I like to try to not get too far ahead of him because if I lose sight of him, he might fall off the side of the mountain. Like, because it's almost happened multiple times.
It's been known to happen.
So I like to keep him in front of me if I possibly can. And then I'll like dally with like pictures here and there.
So we took a bus down to Juneau. We were hiking up some trail and we came across this place that was the perfect spot for a tent. So we just camped there.
Yeah, like the local kids obviously partied. So like when we camp, we actually picked up a whole bunch of the trash when we were there and we left.
Yep.
Like we did that everywhere we went. But it was funny because when the police were like escorting us back after we like missed the bus and got rescued, I was like, I don't want to tell him we're sleeping in the woods illegally. So I was just like, hey, we haven't eaten all day. It's like almost 10 o'clock at night. Like, anyway, you could drop us off at the local grocery store. And he's like, absolutely. So we just got like escorted. We rolled up and like everybody was like, what the hell is going on? We just got like dropped off out of the back of the car.
They don't normally see people get out of the back of the car.
And what's crazy about that, the whole reason we didn't want to call was because we didn't want to get fined and stuff. It didn't cost us anything. They were so cool and lax up there. They were just like, we don't even care. But it was insane because like, I kind of knew we were off trail and I was looking at my map and it was one of those things where the trail like went around a bend and I was like, oh, if we go straight, we'll catch up to it. Well, I failed to like include the fact that there was like elevation loss and we ended up like skirting around and it got super sketchy at certain points where like Tim, having no body awareness whatsoever, was like barrel lugeing down these things. Like normal people would put their feet in front of them and like slowly use friction to like keep themselves from flying down. He just like starts flying down. I had to like shove him against the wall to like get him to stop moving. I was like, what is wrong with you?
YOLO, so man, YOLO.
Navigating this dangerous situation. And then I started panicking because I'm like, if he dies, I am never going to forgive myself for like failing to incorporate the fact that he sucks.
I feel like Tim is made of rubber.
Oh, just so bad. So I like swung over this, like, you know how water makes rocks super slick. I like literally used this limb to like sling over, and I had to like pull Tim along with his hiking pole. And then we finally got to a point where it was like super soft, like pine needles, and we were just sitting there, and this like blue jay was about ready to kill us because we were sitting there. And I was like, I don't think we can go down any further, because it was like a 70-foot straight drop at that point. We got as close to the trail as possible, and then it was just like, okay, we're 70 feet above it. Like, I don't think we can go down here. And they have these really jaggy plants. And I was like, I feel like I might be able to figure this out, but I'm not so sure about him. So then when we called, like, they had to rappel us down. I was down in like 5 minutes. It was like 45 minutes by the time he got down. The lady was just like, make it out. He's like, Jay?
I think you need to give him a parachute.
the lesson of this last story was, we take rope with us everywhere we're hiking.
We're going to start taking rope with us, because it's like you can at least cling in. I actually want to, I know, like, I've taken some climbing lessons, but like I really do want to get into rock climbing, especially like for that whole thing. And he wants to climb like Denali and stuff. So I think we're going to get into mountaineering at some point. And funny you say parachute. I really, really, really want to get into paragliding, like to the point where we climb up and then jump off and just like glide down. And he hates going down mountains, so I think that'll be
a really perfect. Cool. It's a win-win situation for everybody.
Yeah. We have friends who do that, and they absolutely love it.
I'm so like attracted to the sky for some reason. So we'll do that at some point. So those couple of trips. And then what was crazy about that is like we were packing so much in such a short amount of time that I was really ready to do the van life thing where we could slow down the pace. And like, it's one of those things where sometimes when you get somewhere, you realize there's a whole bunch more to explore than you could see by like doing research preemptively. And the other places are like, they look cool, but they're actually not that cool. So you can leave and go like drive to the next place. So then what we did was like, I gave my work a full like 9 month notice that I was leaving. I was there for 11 and a half years. And like, my boss was super cool, but I was like, I literally have to give myself a date. Otherwise this is just going to drag on forever. So it was like during the pandemic, we got a lot of stay at home time, which like saved us, but I was working more because my dad's ridiculous. And like the rich people he caters to like wanted more stuff done. So I actually ended up working more during the pandemic. I had burnout so freaking bad. It was not even funny. So that was the whole reason we couldn't get our condo like rehabbed and sold. We had, the month after I moved into this place, my pipe on my toilet broke and flooded my entire house.
Wow. So
we've been basically living in construction for like 7 years.
Oh, yeah. Cats love it.
Like, we have open ceilings. Like, it's like a free fall. I have no bandwidth to like discipline. And he's just over here like, the cats cannot be on the counters. I was like, I've never let them tell them no their whole existence. Like, what makes you think they're going to listen now?
They listen.
He has. He's like seriously an animal whisperer.
So like what happened was, after all these experiences, then it was just, we knew we wanted to do it. We had the rigs. And then it was just, okay, we have to figure out how to pay for it. And that's.
So, well, that was that part, but I was going to actually talk about the rig, because we were talking about the sink thing. So what we did was, we realized with Juno and with Maui that like we can live on very, very little. Mm-hmm. We can figure it out. So it's like, I wanted something very simple. And when we bought it, it was built out, as you said, Frankie, but it was so heavy. We were getting 13 miles to the gallon in that van. And it was like, this is not acceptable. And I know I'm an engineer, like that's actually my degree. So I know like weight per mile per gallon is just absolutely atrocious. So I was looking into actually building like lightweight airplanes are made with like that foam board and like a mesh bedding to actually create the torsion strength. Cause that's the problem with the foam board, but that's super light. So I was going to build cabinets with all that stuff. But the thing that I decided to do was like, okay, we're going to do a test run of like 4 or 5 months, and I'm going to put in the stuff we 100% know we're going to keep, but then I'm going to leave the other stuff flexible, because as you live in it, you will find out what works and what doesn't work. Mm-hmm. So he got a little gung happy and bought some stuff that I kind of knew wasn't going to end up being something we were going to keep doing. But I was like, all right, whatever, that's fine. Like the swivel seat in the van, we don't use it.
Yeah,
like
at all. That was a waste.
So it's like an added probably like $35 and 35 pounds that I'm going to have to rip out now, which completely unnecessary. But it's like, I put the flooring in. We wanted a stand, a stationary bed, because we don't like the idea of taking 10 minutes to assemble like a table and then assemble a bed and assemble a table. Because he loves to just take mini like breaks during the day and just like lay. So that was like 100%. We knew that needed to happen. And like the people who talk about like the confined space of a van and needing bigger space kind of baffle us, because you have all of nature.
Mm-hmm.
Like, like for us, we would rather have a pop-up outside room where we can expand, like if we're having a tizzy moment where we're just like, screw you, you're being annoying. But like, honestly, we do so much.
You look over here for?
Because we have them on occasion. Usually after it's been like 10 hours of driving, the cats are panicking. And like that, when we first started, we were like a week late. So we had a reservation at Big Bend. So we had only like a few days to get there. And he was just like, I'm tired of cold. I'm driving 10 hours straight. And I was under the impression we were going to go slow and steady because we didn't have time to prepare the cats. And we just like threw them in the van and took off. And they were not happy. They were not happy. We had to stop at a dry cleaner and like actually get that taken care of. But like after that, the cats adapted really quick, except for the one, he took a lot longer to like come out from under the bed. But I think he does that on purpose to just like be a butt. I think they really liked it. Like once they would claw at the doors in the mornings, and when we were out on BLM land in New Mexico, I was just like, I can't even right now. And I would just throw the doors open. And I was like, you know what? We were going to stalk them, put them on leashes and all this. I was like, you know what? I don't even care. We're not near anything. There's no roads. There's no people out here. I was like, if you die, that's your own problem. Yep. And he's like, you need to be out there watching. I'm like, you can do that like all you want. I was like, I'm exhausted. I'm still sleeping. Like, I was like, I can't handle this. So then when we did that, like they always came back because I guess cats are real good with the smell thing. Like we actually thought, well, the one cat we have is really dumb, like inbred dumb. We weren't sure if she would like get eaten by a rabbit or just like, you know what I mean? That kind of thing. She's not exactly the brightest cat in the box. She got stuck in the same hole in our house like 3 or 4 times. And then Tim would get her out and she'd be like, oh, what's this hole in the wall? And she'd go right
back in.
We're just like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah.
But she's like the lovingest cat ever. And it's his absolute baby. Like he loves that freaking cat. Yeah.
How many do you have?
We have 3. So like we're living in this tiny Chevy van with 3 cats. And the one is like half Maine Coon. He's ginormous. So pretty crazy. So we wanted to do the lightweight thing. And then you were talking about the whole money thing. So like I'm working on keeping stuff lightweight, keeping gas mileage down.
Yep.
Or not mileage down, but like miles per gallon down. And he's focused on, and functionality. And he's focused on how to make money, how to keep it flowing and all this other stuff. And I had always been a saver just because I worked so much that I had, like, I didn't spend anything. Like I literally had so much money and I had put so much money into like random adventure, like endeavors to try to create something to make more money, but I was always in the wrong area. Like I'm kind of disgusted at how much money I threw away, like 40,000 here. We lost 60,000 for a Ponzi scheme. We lost all this other stuff. And it's just like, I'm so pissed that I didn't just give it to him. Like granted, when he started, he lost like 20,000-30,000 with the investment strategy he was using. But then he's one of those people that has to learn by doing, learn by screwing up. I noticed that with the whole house repair thing. But he's like, let me do it. You know, there's more than one way to do stuff. And I'm like, yeah, but we have money to worry about. We have time to worry about. And we have like resources to worry about. So if you screw this up on the first go, we have to go out and buy more stuff. So like, I won't let him touch anything because he just like, I had to fix a hole in the ceiling. I had to fix a hole in the wall because of him. I had to like, I'm just like, Tim, stop touching stuff. So like with the finance thing, he,
I did growth stock investing.
Yeah, you just talk about those.
And what I learned in the growth stock investing was that there are periods when there's higher volatility, but more opportunity to make money, which is the earnings reports. Like if you know a company is going to pop off after the earnings report, you buy it before they report their earnings. And when it pops off, you sell it for like a 5, 10, 12% gain or whatever. And that worked well for a little while. But then it was 2018 when just stuff went sideways. Like companies that were beating their earnings and beating their earnings handily were actually losing value. But it didn't make sense to me. And it was like the whole psychology of investing with the everyday investors. They are like they sell when they shouldn't sell and they buy when they shouldn't buy, basically the psychology behind it. So I learned a very valuable lesson there, like not to get involved in stuff that requires the psychology of stuff, because you'll never beat that.
Mm-mm. Yeah. So, and you also have to be watching it so diligently and like have your beat on the news and when are earnings reports coming out, and like you really have to be on top of it. And if you're trying to like go live a free life in the woods, it's kind of hard to also be checking everything every day all the time.
Yes.
Woods have uncharacteristically unreliable internet access.
That was the other concern with having to be up on that 24/7 was like,
so that's what I found CDs and bonds and like funds that paid like 2 to 3% in yield. And I was like, well, that, wait a minute now. So I basically just dump my money into these things and they generate 5%. I was like, okay, that's better than losing 10%. So then I started investing in those. And the more research I did, the more I came across different vehicles that I could invest in that weren't the normal, like S&P 500 fund, for example. There's ways of, there's other investment opportunities that mirror exactly what the S&P 500 fund does that you can get twice as much yield, three times as much yield. So that's where it all was born. I made mistakes and I was like, oh, I'm tired of losing money. So I'm going to start gaining money with dividends. And then it just snowballed like from there. And then I talked to, I remember in a couple of your live streams, I brought up dividend stocks and people were like pretty interested. And I was like, well, wait a minute, there could be an audience for this. Hold on, let me think about this. And then the more I talked to other people around here and the people on the road, I was like, there's a really big audience for this where they can actually take what they have in their checking account where they're not making anything. You don't make crap in your checking account or your savings account, and you can just dump it into something that'll pay you 10, 12, 14% a year. Mm-hmm. The part where people get confused though, is they focus on when they open up their brokerage account and it says, instead of says 100,000, it'll say like 87,000. They're like, oh my God, I lost 13,000. You didn't, you know, technically you did, but you didn't, you gained whatever you gained in dividends and you don't lose the 13,000 until you sell. So
yeah, the valuation thing, it's not about the principal with dividend stocks. The prices fluctuate based on that, the hype and the media and the panic and all that stuff. But eventually if you pull out from the stock market as a whole and you look over time, it always goes up. So you don't have to worry about the snapshot in time valuation. You just worry about how many assets that can buy you and how much those dividends are paying out per share.
And then you have the second group. You have the first group that says my portfolio balance says 85,000. I had 100,000. I'm panicking. And then you have the ones that can comprehend that it doesn't matter what your portfolio balance says. It matters what you're generating. But what they are the ones that panic because their cost average is higher because every time they drip it, reinvest it, drip it in, it sends their purchase price initially up. And they're like, well, I spent $43 for on average to buy this. It's like, well, yeah, technically, but if you look at it like logically, you only put $5,000 in at this price.
Yeah.
And so the drip is that's free money that you actually didn't put that in. So like when I do the computations for people, I just said, what did you initially invest? And how much did you invest? How many shares did you get? I remember I send you text messages. I need to know how many shares you initially purchased so I can put it in the spreadsheet and be like, okay, so you initially spent $5,000 on the stock. Your current value is $5,400, but it says your cost basis value is $6,500. That's not true. Your cost basis is $5,000.
Because every dollar that got invested after that $5,000 wasn't my dollars.
Yeah, it was your interest growing and compounding. So I like to look at things from an ROI calculation standpoint, whereas like the brokerage is calculated on a monthly cost basis or whatever they do.
Like they do like whenever it reinvests automatically, that'll drive your price up. It like
so it's not
typically it's if not, you think about it, it would be something that makes people want to possibly get out and scare, like a scare tactic almost, so that way they could like somebody can make money off of it in a sense.
Well, I subscribe to a lot of different publications. I've paid for a few. Hopefully there are tax write-offs after we launched the business, and others are free, but like they ultimately all have the same blueprint. Is basically, well, here's, you buy this up to this price and then you put a 25% stop loss in. So if it falls 25%, you automatically sell. I'll tell you in a minute how that's piss poor. You never do that. Mm-hmm. And what they do is when they publish that on the 1st or the 5th or the 12th, whatever day of the month they do that, if you follow what they put in, it goes up 6 or 7%. And then if you read their publication a few months down the road, oh, we got out of that position with a 27% gain. So what they're doing is they're inflating the price with their subscribers so they can sell their stuff for a gain. And then they give you no information outside of that, like when you should sell or like what you should look for when you buy it or sell it. They don't do any of that. They basically just say, buy it. Okay, we got out of that position like 4 months ago. we made money on it. So like whenever they like we've made money 96% of the time. Well, it's very easy to make money 96% of the time if you're controlling the narrative.
Yeah. And going back to what you just said, Frankie, I think you're right. I honestly think most brokerages cater to the wealthy, not the normal individual people. And the wealthy people know how to look at those things. So it's like they have no incentive of, I think it's probably easier for them to represent it the way that they represent it in those like your overviews of your account versus like the individual little guys who they're trying to live their life. They're trying to save, they're trying to work, they're trying to spend time with their families. They're not trying to like learn all the ins and outs of investing because it's not.
Choo-choo train.
It's not exactly. It takes some time and it takes a lot of time to comb through all the BS because there's so much spam in the financial world. It's disgusting.
And I would even say the person that is like the normal 9-to-5 person, that might be $10,000 of their life savings, everything that they have that they've put into the stock or a couple different stocks. And then they're scared of losing that money where the rich person doesn't. This person could care less. They don't want to lose the money, but at the same time, they're like, it could sit there for 10 more years. I don't have to worry about it.
They really don't understand how to play the game. It is technically a game.
Yeah. So
treat it like a game. You actually will win more often than not. I honestly think now that I've been looking at everything, I'm going to come up with a way to get around the psychological aspects, because that's actually something that I'm interested in. And I'm actually been spending the last few years looking into psychology and all this other stuff. Because it's like, that's where people lose the most money is they take their money out at the wrong times.
Yep.
They need to tap it at the wrong times. The beautiful part about the strategy that we've done is you never have to touch your assets. You never have to touch your principal. You pull out the cash generation.
All you do is you turn your drip off. Mm-hmm. So you cut your automatic reinvesting off and it goes straight into your brokerage account in the form of cash. And then you can just transfer that to your bank.
Mm-hmm. And then so that becomes the money that you live on every month.
Yes, it's exactly that. That's the whole strategy that I've been trying to convey to people is, okay, so if you start with 25 or 50,000 or 10,000, whatever you start with, mm-hmm. you control when you actually reinvest it. And then you control whenever you can actually just take the cash out. You just basically, you kind of, I don't want to say like have to force yourself to live a life that you may not want to because you only have like $500 a month.
We're in the van life community here. These guys usually live on less, or at least they should be living on less.
I don't want to say, curb your appetite for adventure because you're only generating $500 a month in dividends.
But you can still live a lot of it. And I can tell you how to get around a lot of expenses when it comes to traveling and stuff.
Also, it could also just be a secondary income or like one of your cash flow streams. Yeah. You know,
to you guys. Well, like when I was watching the videos, I was like, I want to do van life, but I don't want to do that.
Correct.
Tim's other motivation is he does not want to have to be chained to making YouTube videos.
I don't like, it doesn't look fun to me.
Yeah.
It looks like it would ruin a lot of my experiences because, oh, where's the camera? Where's the camera? Do we have the camera? Do we have I bless people that do that. Then they make money from it. Awesome. Kudos to all you. Well, but that's just
love
not. It.
If you love doing that, and that's something that again, everybody personality wise is completely different. We are very logic based. We do not really like to cater to like the social appetites and trending stuff. Like that's just not our game. That's why we chose more of the investing side of things. Other people might love the YouTube thing. And you're right, Alex, like the multiple streams of income. You don't have to just rely on this one thing. We're trying to see if we can do just one thing. Yeah. For the challenge aspect to help other people. And it's like, if we can do that. And a lot of people have more money than they realize. Like one of the biggest things, I'm a math nerd. So I've been doing calculations and like most people think they need an astronomical amount of money to get started to be able to tap enough to retire. Well, normal calculations, they do that 4% thing where you're only supposed to tap 4% of your nest egg and you diminish that over how many years you think you're going to live. Well, with the innovations with technology and stuff, people are living longer and longer. So those estimates are like flawed, in my opinion. If you said it,
I watched the whole thing. I don't mean to interrupt you. I watched the whole thing where it was basically like, based on those estimates, he basically broke the calculator because it was like, if you are a person who's, you know, 20 to 30 years old right now, you would have to save an exorbitant amount of money that it just like, and with inflation the way that it is, and with all of, you know, these extra things that are going on, it's
very daunting and looks and feels impossible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And people get psychologically depressed by seeing that number. So what they do is they actually disassociate. And this is where the mental health stuff comes in. People's coping mechanisms, they go back to the ADHD thing and the depression thing. And it's a coping mechanism to avoid pain and avoid that future projection of just pain. But what we can do instead is if you focus more on the smaller number and then setting up a way to make that feasible. Like I was about to just post a thing on Instagram where it's like the average person spends $1,350 a year on bottled water.
Yeah.
You guys use, I think, a Birch Air and Alexa Pure too.
Yeah.
Like that is so cheap compared to the bottled water consumption. Oh, yeah. You took that $1,350 and you invested it in what we're talking about. And we did an estimate of 10% per yield per year, which is actually very conservative compared to what we actually make. But if you took that, you'd make $135 in the year from interest or from dividend payouts. But if you break that down per month, it's $11.25 per month. But here's where it gets cool. That doesn't sound like a lot, but that's every month for the rest of your life.
And that's that price is adding into what you've already invested. So now your investment actually becomes higher than that $1,350 every time. And then you gain more dividend on that.
So if you actually then, that's just the snapshot of the first month when you drop that $1,350 in. If you then take that in a 10-year time frame, that $11.25 goes up to over $30 a month by just allowing it to continue to compound.
Mm-hmm.
That is the magic of what we're talking about. So mm-hmm. it's like you can take these habits and you can like swap them out for a cheaper version of the same thing. So you're not necessarily compromising on quality of life. You're investing in your future and you're like taking snippets like you would in a video game. You're literally taking snippets. Okay, there's my $11.25. My goal is say $2,000 a month. That's a piece of it. And then you get motivated when you see how that grows.
Yeah.
You can find like haircuts for another one. I think people in general spend like $1,418. I think nails, people who do nails are like $1,800 a year on like just nail treatments.
Mm-hmm.
There's another chunk of stream of income. You can do that stuff on your own and save a crap ton of money.
I think the one that people almost always overlook that I found would be the simplest solution that wouldn't impact your daily life, like period at all, is your tax refund.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't be budgeting that in.
Instead of taking your tax refund to buy like a TV or this or that, just take that and automatically just invest it. If you do that for 10 years, you're going to have, I don't know, $12,000, $13,000, $14,000 in the bank.
Mm-hmm. And what interests me about it is like, you know, a lot of the time you want to be in a relationship with somebody. So it's two people. So instead of it being $1,350 for the water, it's actually $2,700, you know, and so on and so forth. So, you know, if both of you are getting a haircut, you'll also add that money in. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So like now you're doubling that. So that $30 originally now is $60 a month, you know, because you've doubled it in a sense.
Well, and one of the things I've noticed with like people and habits, so like habits are insidious. Like our brain, in order to save capacity, what it does is it takes time for the first couple things till it figure out the best way to continue to do that thing. Like, okay, cue trigger like habit. Well, to unprogram those, you have to be a lot more conscientious. And I used to be an alcoholic. One of the way that I quit drinking, and I can be around alcohol and not like go back, fall back. And that's unheard of for a lot of people who have like a crazy addiction. So what I did was I focused so hard on the negative aspects of the habit I wanted to get rid of. And I did not think of any of the positive pieces. And then the thing that I was trying to move over to, I focused on all the positives and none of the negatives. And what that does is our brain is programmed to gravitate towards positive and away from negative. Mm-hmm. You eventually reprogram your brain and you're not sending mixed signals when you do it that way. So if mm-hmm. you can conscientiously do that little thing, you can give up any habit. And one of the other ones, like I absolutely love, I think his name's James Clear's Atomic Habits book. That book was amazing. It's written in like the way that I think, like logic, whatever. But I love the fact that he talks about making it super difficult to do the thing that you like are trying to get rid of. So he's talking about this one guy who was trying to like watch less TV. He like drug his TV into his closet. It's funny because your potential for actually going and getting that TV out to then watch something is like next to none because it's a pain in the butt. So if you make the things you don't want to do a lot harder and you make the things you want to do a lot easier, you're more apt to choose the easy thing. Mm-hmm. And then one of the other things I loved was that like if you're trying to save your $300,000 or whatever it is, don't focus on the big picture. Focus on the smallest amount possible where you do not feel resistance and get started. Once you get started, that's when your hormones, your dopamine, and all that other stuff starts flowing, and you're focusing on those positives and you're building that income stream as opposed to cope, fear, and like inactivity. It gets rid of that anxiety. It gets rid of the like dissociation stuff that people go through, and you can still enjoy a large quality of life. The other one I absolutely love is like a money saving tip. If you have Hulu, Netflix, and like Prime and all those other things, you can put those on pause and rotate through each month. So you're not spending for all of them each month. You're only spending for one. Mm-hmm. Like those little hacks. Oh, and the other one I absolutely love, like the average house has 300,000 items. Most people won't sell their items. Yeah, that's crazy, right? Most people want to get back what they originally invested in that thing, but the problem, they don't factor in depreciation. So here's a little, like, sometimes it's a numbers game. If you literally just need $100,000 to get your butt on the road to go, like, live the life you want and get out of that 9-to-5 that is draining your soul, what you can do is you can have a massive yard sale where you incentivize people to buy 10 items at $1 a pop. Like, just put it up, put the numbers out, whatever you want. And then, like, if you sell 100,000 items for $1, there's your $100,000.
Yep.
And that's only a third of what the average. Well,
and once again, you know, that goes back to, like, you know, the business thought is, if you make a product, you don't have to make a product because you have it all over your house, first and foremost. But if you make a product that you literally could sell everybody in the world, even if you sold it for 50 cents, you're a multi-billionaire, if not trillionaire, you know? Yeah. So, you know, it's the same thought process as that. You know, that you're talking about with just the items in your house. And it could be 10 books. It could be 10, you know, of these electrical cords that are sitting around the house everywhere, you know, and there's so many
people. But I mean, if you're not using it,
If
you're not using it, one of the biggest things when Tim sold his rental property, like, he left a whole bunch of stuff over there. And when we went over there to like get rid of everything, he was like, "Why? I didn't even realize I still had this stuff." He's like, "Why do I have it?" And it's funny, when you start getting rid of stuff, you actually start having more mental clarity, because there is a reflection of what's around you versus what's like your mental clarity and cognitive processes. So I was going to say something about the so like, you don't have to do the house thing. What Frankie was just talking about with the passive income, like, if you have a skill set, like, if Tim's amazing with this finance stuff, if you have a skill set that other people would pay you for, create a digital product that's going to pay you over and over and over again for that one thing. I mean, you have to figure out how to market it and stuff, but you're still generating some form of passive income. Even if it seems tiny in the beginning, over time, the more you add to it, it starts building up over time. And then you have this freedom of stuff. I wanted to go back to the whole, like, how much you need to invest. So generally, you were talking about, Alex, you were talking about that astronomical sum. The cool thing with dividend investing, I came up with an equation. So what you would do is you take how much money you need a month. Let's say it's $2,000. You multiply it by 1,200 and you divide it by your interest rate. We're going to use 10%. That would come up with $240,000 that you'd need, versus the other method, you'd need over double that.
That's wild.
That's like, you're cutting what you would need in half by using the income investing strategies and dividend payouts that we do. That makes this very attainable. And that makes this to the point where you do not have to necessarily wait until retirement age to start living the life you want. Mm-hmm. And that was the huge goal for us, because, like, I have burnouts. Oh, burnout was the other thing. If you're not living a life congruent with who you are, your burnout is literally a symptom of, like, you need to change something. So for me, that I've read so much stuff that talk about how burnout was, it would take you 6 months to a year to recoup from. It was like 2 weeks of going from the office and working to living in the van. And it was like completely gone for me. That was a huge, like, eye-opening moment. So it's like, if you guys are sitting struggling, you want to do the van life thing, like, you can definitely get started. And sometimes even just taking the break to get the clarity, even if it's just 2 weeks, take that break from work, use that 2 week leave to get that clarity. Once you have a taste of that life, you can't go back.
Yeah.
Well, so what you said before really made me think about the fact that, like, focusing on all the positives, like, we try to share with people the good, the bad, the ugly, the great, the beautiful, you know, like, I want people to have a full understanding of what they're getting into. Like, sometimes the water smells and, you know, what are you going to do? But, like, for us, when we were making the transition from working in a corporate setting to moving to van life, it was so easy to make all those budget cuts, to sell all those things, to do like 100% of our focus time and energy on this van build, on the van lifestyle, like, figuring it out, because
all we were seeing was the negatives of staying in the job, of working another 40 years to hate where we're at, of, you know, the commute and the, you know, like you focus on all the negatives of mm-hmm. what you're leaving and then all the positives that van life was going to bring to us. So it was so easy to make these switches, to make these flips, to, you know, be 100% committed to making the change because, like you were saying, of the mindset, it's like, focus on the positive of the thing you want to move towards. And then it's so easy to let go. Well, not necessarily so easy always, but it's easier to let go of the thing that you have been holding on to for this whole time.
Yeah, I would say yeah. that if you don't get, if you get anything from this podcast, I think that was a moment of like clarity for a lot of people to try to switch their mindset to like the, you know, the positive compared to the negative train of thought. And how to use them to your benefit. Because you can mm-hmm. use a negative train of thought to your benefit. You just have to put it in the right place.
Yeah. And I consider emotions and like mindset a tool. Like when I was so emotionally devoid. You heard from our earlier stories. And once I started reading in all the psychology, I realized that emotions are actually a tool because they give you a clue to what the hell is going on inside you. And when you realize those negative emotions are actually telling you that change needs to happen, you're like, oh, okay. So that means you need to actually look at your life and and see where it needs to change. And the reason I love the personality stuff is like, whatever your personality is, it usually can give you clues as to what would best suit you. And what, like you were talking about how some people have trouble getting away from that stuff. Certain personality types have a lot harder time of letting go tradition and comfort. I'm a thrill seeker. Like I'm pretty sure. Oh my God. Yeah. You. I'm pretty sure you're one too.
That's Frankie.
Frankie, I'm sorry. Yeah. It's okay. And like, if you can't tell, like Tim's an intellectual one. So it's like, there's different tiers of each thing. But what I was going to say is I really, going back to what Frankie was talking about in the beginning with spending a crap ton of money, getting a Mercedes, $80,000, putting all this money into something. To me, that's falling into that perfectionism mindset. And the problem with that is, there's two things when it comes to success. You need to plan and think, but you also need action to give feedback. So if you do all one and you don't do the other, you actually set yourself up for failure. So my best advice, if you do not have a van, go take a trip and try to live like you would do in van life. Even if it's just for 2 weeks, you will find out if you're cut out for it. Because the thing is, I don't know if you've read the book, Big Magic. I absolutely love that book. It's amazing.
Literally right here.
Right? That book is amazing where she's talking about the shit sandwiches. If you do not love something enough to be okay with the shit sandwiches, the pieces of it that suck, that is not the right avenue of like where you're supposed to be living. So for van life, we're cool with the stinks in the van. We're cool with the weird smells. We're cool with the finding places to live or to stay over at night. We're cool with like that kind of stuff.
Digging a hole
to poop in. We're cool with
the poo hole.
Poo hole. Oh my God, Tim loves his poo bucket. It's absolutely
the funny. Luggable loo is the best thing REI sells.
Yeah, he loves comfort, his poo
bucket. That's our bathroom. Like I literally, when we pull up to a place, I'll dig a hole and I'll put the hole in the bucket, and that's we're good so
then
to
he
go.
He poops in the bucket and then he dumps it back in the hole. Because I'm in the whole mindset of like, compost is compost. If you put it back in the earth, all the microorganisms and stuff break that down. I actually think that's better for the planet than putting it through a septic sewage system, putting more chemicals into it and doing whatever the heck you're doing. My perspective, I know it's illegal in a lot of places, but I was like, what did they do back in the day? They pooped in holes. Mm-hmm. Like
they probably didn't even dig a hole. They just pooped.
The major thing when it comes to the poo aspect is just not doing it by a water stream. You don't want a massive amount by a water stream that is, you know, feeding people water, but that's going through a filtration system anyway, most likely. But you don't want to,
contaminating it for the animals and stuff.
You don't want to shit where you eat. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the general sense of it.
Like, oh my God, I just ran into somebody on van life the other weekend who was dumping their gray water in the water grates in Walmart parking lots. And over around here, like, that goes right into like the local streams.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, I was like, you'd be better off dumping it in the grass than in right. the septic thing. I was like, and to be honest, if somebody sees you doing that, that's a hell of a huge fine.
Oh, for sure. Well, so here's the thing too. Gray water is actually used as watering grass and crop.
Yeah. So I could pee into that category too, to be honest.
Yeah, you could, because there's different nutrients and stuff in it that you
absolutely.
That would help.
Sterile, and I like the way it tastes.
Yeah, that's why you get that.
I'm duck and dog.
Well, you know. you joke about that, but one of the things that she wants to try here in like the next few months.
I don't know if you should say this. People are gonna think we're crazy.
Drinking our pee at some point.
I'm into the whole health community, and like there's something about, apparently if you drink your own urine, not in excess, it doesn't have to be a ton, but you produce everything your body actually needs to heal, because it's like it's going through and it's programming whatever in your pee. And then if you drink it, it's actually giving you the coating. Supposedly the pee in the morning has like mass amounts of stem cells and stuff.
Interesting.
Not for everybody. I haven't actually experimented with this yet, but
we'll have to do a follow-up.
Yeah.
I get into some crazy stuff. Like I like right now I'm on
a well, and it's fun to just try things sometimes too. Like yeah. It's like, oh, okay, do the lemon cayenne thing for a bit and see how that makes you feel. Or do like there was this coconut lemon electrolyte thing, and like how does that make you feel? And like drinking your own urine.
Well, isn't life just like a big, huge experiment, right?
Again, frankly, think like I do, right? Like life to me is literally about empiricism. You have to do it to figure it out. Like somebody could give me advice all day long and I'm just like, until I do it for myself and get that feedback, like I don't necessarily agree.
Well, learn by doing, it's acceptable.
Well, that's what I was about to say also.
But when I do it, it's not negatively impacting our planning and decision-making.
The person giving you that advice of like the turmeric and blah, 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 guess what they did? They tried it. They experimented. You know what I mean? So it's like, you have to experiment to figure
out. Yeah. And like, I do some crazy stuff. Like right now I'm doing a parasite cleanse. And to be honest, like if anybody's looking for like mental clarity, dude, like I have found some crazy stuff. And one of the biggest things, like Alex, I don't know if you... Do you notice a difference in Tim after talking to him for the last couple of years? Like he's more engaged. His eyes are more open. Like he's more. So like I found this thing called amino acids. I never knew that that was another component of nutrition, right? So I realized our body's like digestive system is not working properly. And you guys being vegans, I assume like you have issues, not issues, but like your protein sources are different than meat.
We haven't been vegan for a while.
We've been plant-based. Yeah. We never were like full vegan.
We were for a little bit.
You were, and I was very deliberate to never say that I was a vegan because I feel like people take that very seriously.
Yeah, sure,
and
sure.
Anything can clear anybody up. I just say vegan, I'm paraphrasing.
I was deliberate, trying to try this diet out for a while. And I think I did it for about nine months, a year. Before I actually finally like said, you know what, I want to eat these other foods. And it wasn't like a feeling thing. I actually felt one of the best I've ever felt being like doing that diet. Yeah. But I was missing foods in a country where these type of foods were being made. Yeah. And I'm like, damn, I want to try these things.
So what I like to do is I like to try to get in tune enough with my body that I eat intuitively. Like if I'm craving grapes, Tim's on a grape kick lately.
Grapes are like gold anymore.
They're so expensive.
Yeah.
Our local grocery store just had a coupon yesterday where it was 85 cents a pound for grapes. Whoa. We saved $8 on like 4 pounds of grapes. I was like, heck yeah.
They're delicious frozen.
I know. They're so good. But yes, I agree. I actually agree with the plant-based thing. But for the meat component, if you're craving meat, my assumption is that there's something in meat that your body needs, and that's why you're craving it. And our cravings fluctuate over time. We're humans. We're both part of nature. We fluctuate over time. Your stress levels do not stay at a constant. Like nothing stays at a constant. They're all over the freaking place, like the stock market. So like, I want to get more in tune with all that stuff. So for example, I would consider him stuck in the apathy category, which technically falls into the depression realm. Because I actually look at depression as a coping mechanism to avoid negative feelings. So you actually numb out the positive and the negative to prevent pain. So I don't know if I'm accurate on that, but that's just been my observation.
I numb out everything but logic.
It might not be for the same reasons, but it's the same mechanism. So when I actually started force feeding him the amino acids, he turned in like a whole different person. And this was before he stopped eating crap. Like he was literally compulsively eating bread, pasta, like potato chips, like all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, basically in the last year, I cut out all sugar. I cut out all processed foods. I cut out all gluten. So like.
But I had been preaching that to him.
The diet's quite banging right now.
I had been preaching like him feeling like crap. Like he had, I would call it ulcerative colitis. And he was never diagnosed. But now that I, like we talk more openly about his poop and stuff, like I'm pretty sure he had it.
Everyone does.
But he wouldn't
he literally wouldn't listen to me for that long. The only thing that I noticed as a catalyst was putting them on those amino acids. It was like a couple of weeks. And then all of a sudden he spontaneously started eating better. He spontaneously started watching these documentaries on food. He spontaneously started doing all this other stuff. And he lost 35 pounds in like the first, was it month?
Yeah, it was the first month. Yeah.
And he's down. I finally took a before picture. Like, we'll do an after one at some point when he's finally down. But I don't think he's continuing to lose. And I even put my dad, who is so anti-change, so anti-kicking the food, so anti-whatever. I put him on the aminos with just the tether of, hey, you'll lose weight like Tim did. My dad is down to the lowest that he's been. His pants are falling off. So now he's complaining that his pants are too big. And I'm just like, oh my God, can't win here. There's always a way to complain. But like, his health has actually gotten better. And what I've noticed with that is his sugar cravings are changing. I actually wonder if sugar cravings are just a nutritional deficiency.
Well, often your body is just like searching for something. So it's like, I need more calories. I need more of something. And you don't really necessarily know exactly what that something is, especially if you're not in tune to like, ooh, I need grapes. I need beef. I need, whatever. So you just grab the easiest, quickest calorie source. And often
the feeling go to is habit. You have that soothing feeling. And that's what's so crazy about it. It's like when you start getting this whole stuff, it's insane. It's fascinating. But I wanted to point out, he's been functioning better mental clarity wise, which has actually improved his trading ability. And it's actually allowing him to spontaneously do chores and stuff, which is helping us.
The most important part for van life about that is it actually costs less to eat and I eat more.
Yeah. So it's
what are these amino acids? Is it like a liquid that you drink or?
Okay. So the thing is because we live in such a toxic world, our digestive system is actually really screwed up. And sometimes it's not even just a toxin. Sometimes stress can actually act like a toxin. And when that happens, it's fight or flight. Everybody knows your digestive and your immune system shuts down. So when that happens, it's not absorbing nutrients. It's not doing all this other stuff. And what happens then, the liver gets backlogged. And then that's why there's an epidemic right now of fatty liver, non-fat alcoholic fatty liver disease. It's actually because the stress levels that everybody has and then the lack of nutrition, because the body does amazing things to compensate. So when it's trying to fight a threat, it turns off the digestive system, which is why people get constipated and why people get ulcerative colitis. And then it gets stuck in that needing to repair mode, but it's still not getting what it needs. So I found out that there's four components of nutrition. There's your vitamins, there's your minerals, there's your amino acids, and there's your fatty acids. That's where people talk about the omega-3s and fish oils and stuff. So for vitamins, when you eat food, you're not usually absorbing them properly, even if you're taking normal vitamins, because of the fillers, the additives, all this other stuff. The best way to actually get vitamins is through a new product with nanotechnology, oddly enough, called liposomals. What it does is it mimics the cell wall and it allows those vitamins to actually absorb right through your like esophagus and stomach lining. So it doesn't even have to go into your digestive system to get into your bloodstream. Mm-hmm. For the minerals, they make this stuff called fulvic and humic. It's derived from natural organic plant matter and it has like 75 trace minerals in it. And because it's in an organic state, it absorbs, because it's a really, really small particle, it absorbs through the cell walls a lot easier. So like in the morning, I do those two things. And what I've also noticed, and this, I figured this out from the amino acid thing, underneath our tongue is extremely thin and very absorbent. So like a lot of doctors, if they need to get something really fast in you, they'll stick it under your tongue to dissolve. It goes right into your bloodstream. So what I do with the amino acids and I do with the vitamins, I kind of just let them sit there, because even your skin will absorb stuff through it in 26 seconds. So the tongue is actually a lot faster. So I'll dissolve. They're like a powder. I get the essentials because the essentials are all the ones our body cannot make from food. And then our body can take those and make the other like 25 or 30 or however many they are. And without adequate testing and the fact that the body fluctuates, I do not like to just try to pick and choose. I like to do the full spectrums to just let the body figure out what the hell it needs, take what it needs, build what it needs, and just go from there. So adding the amino acids, they're called the essentials, under the tongue. They do not taste very good. My dad does not take them under the tongue. He just takes them via capsule and he's still losing a crap ton of weight. So they are doing something still, but they work better and you spend less money if you actually do them in the powder under the tongue. You save money too if you buy them in bulk and powder. And then for the fatty acids, fish oil, 99% of the time is rancid and actually doing more harm and causing free radicals. The best source of fatty acids is spirulina, literally seaweed. They actually do make this liposomal product I found on Amazon that has your omega-6s, your omega-3s, your omega-9s, and your omega-12s in it. I didn't even know there were two other ones until I started looking into this. But that gives you a full spectrum as well. It's pretty interesting. And like,
I do experiments with different people. As like my mom, I basically saved her from dying a couple years ago. Like she was literally on her deathbed. I now have her off 16 different medications and she's like thriving in comparison. And she had like every organ removed possible. She had depression, like all this crazy stuff. So now when people want stuff, the one guy, I kind of do little bits of experiments with people, but I just have him on nutrition and it is absolutely amazing just seeing what is unfolding for him. His yeah. man boobs are shrinking. His appetite's changing. He seems more cognitive. Like he was so like mentally fogged that he couldn't like process or anything. And we're visibly seeing it work right now. Like that when we work with my dad, that he is a lot more better with cognitive processing. So it's fascinating to see these little shifts with people.
I could tell you one of the reasons why amino acids is helping with the, you know, taking down the desire, decreasing the desire of wanting sugar. It's because amino acids actually balance your insulin.
Yeah.
So if your insulin drops, the first thing you're going to crave is sugar or something that's going to bring your energy back up, which we know today as sugar because that's what we're being fed so much.
Do you know why it dropped your insulin?
What's that?
Do you know why it drops your insulin? They actually modulate stress, and stress is actually a precursor to insulin production. Yeah. Because adrenal fatigue, you actually increase your glucose cravings because your hormones are burning your brain.
It's wild.
And you need glucose to actually put that fire out. Like that's why people are craving sugar. It's actually stress. So when you give it the amino acids, it's really fascinating. I thought on this whole bandwagon while Tim was doing the whole finance stuff.
I feel like you need to put a whole like list or guide or something together to help people work through that because it is a lot to like.
I know. And I actually do something on my website, but it's like I have so much stuff going on. Like my biggest problem is like, I don't want to say staying focused. Like the way my brain works is, and this has actually been part of my issue with trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my life. Like I really envy the people that know what they want to do and they can specialize. I can't. It like literally feels like I'm leaving a part of my soul behind every time I try to stay focused on something. I feel like I'm probably pretty unique in that area. But what I realize is my strong suit is actually in the breadth of information because I start piecing things together and figure out where stuff overlaps. And then I find the leverage points to make the biggest impact in multiple areas.
So let's talk about how you're going to help people with this investing thing, because that's kind of what we we're talking about.
Actually where I started focusing on with this whole thing. And now I'm realizing the psychology component actually filters in with like this whole thing. So it's super fun. So what we're doing is we're actually launching our podcast called Roaming Returns today, which probably will be, we'll just say Tuesday, last Tuesday. We got two episodes right now. I'm going to have a third one done. And then we're going to do one a week where we're going to make it more entertaining. Like, I don't know if you've listened to like finance stuff. It's pretty boring.
Pretty boring is awfully generous.
Well, or it's super sensationalized where it's like,
oh my God,
I don't know what channel he's on, but he's got all the beeps and the horns and the whatever. And he's
like, Jim Cramer. Jim Cramer's a fool. Yeah,
I know. Bye. Sell.
We make it pretty simple for people to understand the technical terms that are being addressed. Oh, and we make it so like, because my whole purpose for doing it was to reach the nomadic community. I'm not saying they're simple, but like they don't really want to be focused on looking up definitions and stuff like that. Yeah. They want to be living.
And I think they're more focused on living the life that they want before retirement, which is exactly what we want to preach to people or to help people with. And they're more likely to be more conscientious about how they're spending their money. And that's a huge key to being successful with actually building a passive income when it comes to investing. So I'm actually setting everything up on the website, which is incomeinvestingfornomads.com. I have a ton of stuff over there right now. I'm probably going to revise it. I literally just spent 2 weeks and like crank stuff out to have something for stuff. Tim offers a coaching plan. We are charging $40 per session. And that is if you want to get started ASAP, you can actually recoup that $40 with one session with him by just following what he's talking about in the first
month. Another option for that would be to actually, if you don't want to pay the $40, just subscribe, and like within a year you'll know like all of my picks, all of my portfolio and everything like that, so you don't actually have to pay.
And that's what I was going to say, we are giving everything away because
like I'm not sure if people have been researching it, but most of the time when you get an email that says buy this one stock today and it'll like do a 60% return or something, they actually never give you the stock.
Watch a 45-minute video.
It's all a hook to get you
and
to
then they
subscribe
bait you
to their
to subscribe, and then they want money. It's like just
I tell people this is what stock I'm looking at. This is why I'm looking at it. I like it or I don't like it. This, if you like the concept of it, here's a couple alternatives that do the same thing. Like, I give it all away for free. I want everybody to generate enough money to live their life. I'm not in this at all for the money. I just want to help as many people as possible. And from what she's telling me, the way to do that is to like sign people up.
Well, I honestly think people don't value stuff unless you put a price tag on it. Like, that's just something I've noticed with things. And like, for $40, like, we're keeping it affordable enough and easy enough to recoup your money in the first month if you do want to pay for that.
And if they want to pay, what happens to that? Like, we're currently in a debate. I don't know if we're just going to take all that money and donate it out to like animal, like ASPCA, or donate it to tree building place or something. Like, I'm not going to take any money from it. It's going to go somewhere. I don't know where it's going to go yet. It might be just putting it into like a high interest savings. And then like, when people have like credit card debt or something like that, we'll be like, here's $1,000 for your credit card debt. I don't know.
I would love to take followers and actually help them pay off their debt with the proceeds of some subscription. Like, that's people's biggest problem. Because the thing with debt, I was just looking at, I had to put something on a credit card the other week that it was just with rehabbing. It was what it was. 22%. Like, that is criminal. I don't understand how this stuff is legal. So it's, if you put all this stuff in debt and you have loans for cars, loans for houses, loans for all this stuff, it's like, no wonder why people can't save and make money. Like, you're starting out in a huge deficit, and student loans are another huge one. So it's like, if we can help people pay off debt and get them educated so that they can become empowered for their finances and money, like, that's what we're trying to do. Because it's like, we have had a taste of this freedom in life, and like, I know what it feels like.
I want
like
as many people to experience the freedom that we experience.
And I know how it feels to die in an office job, like to have your soul crushed in an office job. Like, it's, we're not built to live like this. And I really, like, we really want to change how people are living. Like, if you want to live in a van, go live in a van. If you want to go donate your time to like,
there's a realistic approach to it as well. You can't just save up like $10,000 and expect to pay for van life. And like, you have to be realistic about it. Like, okay, might have to work this crap job, but while you're working the crap job, you literally could be building your van out or living in your van, taking all that money and putting it into investments that you would be spending on your house or your rent or whatever the case may be. So after 2 or 3 years, you'll have $100,000 that then we'll be generating you about $1,000 to $1,250 a month in dividends and interest, and that you totally can live on the road for that.
So that's what we want to do for people. I was actually thinking about creating like a subscription thing, because I know this is something that I would pay for, because it's like, when I'm so interested in something, I really don't have the bandwidth for the stuff I don't care about. And like, with management fees, most managers charge you like 1% of your entire portfolio. If you have $100,000, that's a full-blown $1,000. Well, it's like, if we offered even something at like $10 a month, and you can turn it on and off whenever the heck you want to, but if we offered that and we literally had our entire portfolio put up, we had a full-blown community that could help you with the psychological aspects, so that like, when there are pullbacks, people aren't panicking and jumping ship, because that is the biggest point where you lose money. We were thinking about having like, I haven't built this out yet, but I think this is something, because I would actually pay for it, and I am very, very conscientious about where I put my money. But I think $10 a month would be, and that's cheaper than Netflix, would be something. If you're getting the stock picks, if you see when we evaluate a company and it's no longer worth staying in for the dividend versus like the risk, like, we'll tell you that. We'll show you the exact things. And we were thinking about having different portfolios set up, because some people's risk tolerances are different. So it's like, you have a super secure one set up, you'd have like the middle range, you'd have the other. And I was even coming up with like, a lot of the other gurus talk about just investing in like stock index funds, where it's super passive. You literally just get in one thing and just let it sit forever. So we could do an example of that and just show you the like progress each month, so people can actually see it.
Yeah. And we have other ideas too, like instead of keeping your money in a checking account, put your money into like Worthy.com, for example.
They just boosted their percent yield to 6%.
You make 6% for basically then holding your money, and it takes like, I think, 3 to 5 business days that you can pull your money out at any point. So say you have to pay the sewer bill, you can put your money in there for 28 days, let it accrue 6%, and then pull what you need for the sewer bill out and have it to pay your sewer bill.
Well, I was thinking like, if you had your investments, what you could do is like,
we use it for our emergency fund for like, if our van breaks down, we have money in there for an engine replacement. But all the while it's accruing 6%.
Right. But what I would, availability to be able to pull it out right away is something that, you know, 3 to 5 days is great, because normally it's like, oh, you have to leave this in for 10 years. You know, so that's a great investment.
Yeah. That's why it's better than CDs, because CDs, they do tie your money up for 12 to 18 months. Yeah, if
you
sell them,
you actually get- honestly, lately the CDs haven't even really been giving that great of an interest return. So
what Worthy does, like Worthy.com is something that I think we might actually do a mini podcast on itself. What they do is they take the money they raise from selling the bond. They're called bonds, but they're not really bonds. What they do is they take that money and they actually will give it to local startups, small company
they
startups.
They create loans for local startups because they can't get them through normal banks. So what you're doing, you're kind of doing like a peer-to-peer with an intermediary. And because those companies have to put up collateral, the risk is actually really small, even though it's not FDIC insured, which
FDIC insured,
whatever, FDIC insured. Like I've never had any problem in the last three years.
We've pulled out
10 grand from
20 or 30,000 in the last 3 years, and it hasn't been a problem. So like it's
and they keep raising their yield. Like they're doing something right. It's
Well, we could keep talking about this forever. I mean, we're a little bit past our hour, which is great. We'll definitely have to have you guys back on again, because I feel like this conversation was very rewarding, not only for the audience, but also for us. You guys have helped us in the past when it came to our financial endeavors, and where, you know, we're super thankful.
We can definitely
for
vouch can for vouch. The efficient, I don't know what the word I'm looking for, effectiveness of your strategies, for sure. And even though you're saying like, oh, you know, the difference between passive and like trying to manage it every single day, there is a little bit of managing, but
I tell you exactly what to do. So correct.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd say, Alex, you probably want to get out of this.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're very keen to doing it right away. So I'm sure if there's an email list or subscribing, so you get that, you know, that update right away when everything is going down to get you out of it, I think is the key to it all. And then you can decide if you want to, you know, invest in that $40 or not. You know, like you said, we're all in the business of helping. You know, the reason why we make this podcast is because we want people to have valuable information, you know, so that way they can better themselves, whether it's van life or just any endeavor that they have. If these conversations can help you, that's what we're looking for. And that's what we're looking to do. And, you know, they don't have to pay for this in any type of way. It's free information. And you guys are trying to do the same exact thing. And we definitely endorse exactly what you guys are trying to do. So we appreciate you.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, guys.
We'll do it again soon. Just keep in contact. And
definitely. But we appreciate your story and seeing where you guys, you know, came from. I love that, how open you guys are. It's, you know, a breath of fresh air, because sometimes it's hard to get, you know, normal information out of anybody these days. Yeah. So we really do appreciate you guys.
All right. Well, congrats on the kid.
Thank you.
Yeah. See you guys.
I feel like we could talk to these guys forever. We almost need to make like a longer format conversation, or we just need to get these guys back on the podcast. Let us know what you think in the comments. Alex, what did you think about the conversation?
Yeah, I really liked it. I feel like investing can be scary sometimes. And it's interesting to think, you know, that they've been living on the road with just the dividends from their investments. And yes, you need to have, you know, a certain amount to invest so that you could actually live on those dividends. Mm-hmm. But, you know, every little bit that you're chipping away at it puts you in a better place long term financially. And I think that, you know, even if you haven't started at all, start today, even if it's like $20 here, you know, $100 here, it definitely adds up, and it, you know, is totally worth it to have that kind of safety net.
Yeah, you could definitely start small for sure. I know that that's a plan that I have in my head, is like, I'm going to just, every time I get a couple bucks, I'm just going to throw a couple more bucks in investing in some of these dividend stocks. Because realistically, when you think about it, like, I would much rather make 10% on my money than almost nothing from having my money in like Bank of America or Chase or any of these other places that give you an absolute horrific APR or APY. Is that what it is? APY. And the problem with that is that, like, that's your money and they're making so much money on your money, and you're making nothing from it. So if anything, you might even be paying them for it.
Yeah, actually, a bank can, for every dollar you give the bank, they can invest $10. So if you put $100 in, $1,000 in, like, think how much money that they're making off of your money. And then they give you 0.03 interest. So if you do nothing else, get your money out of the bank accounts that give you no interest and move them into a bank account that at least gives you some interest. Everybody knows inflation's been rocking everyone.
Oh, yeah.
So if you're not earning, you know, at least 2, 3, 4, 5% on the money that's just sitting in your checking account, that money is actually losing value every single day.
Yeah, it makes absolutely no sense to keep your money in there. And I know that a lot of us feel like, oh, but it's secure in there. But regardless, it's going to be secure in the stock market too as well. Just don't take it out when it drops. You wait for it to come back up, and then you know, just have some money in your bank account that you know that you'll possibly need one day down the road. You know, have like that emergency fund that we always talk about, Alex and I. And then you could invest the rest. Just like start making money with your money. Let's be smart, guys.
Mm-hmm. Well, even just for the bank accounts, like have your money, even if when it's just sitting there, regardless of if you invest a dollar of it,
mm-hmm.
it should be earning you something.
Yeah, you should have it in like a SoFi bank account or something.
Oh my gosh. And you can find FDIC insured banks that give higher interest rates as mm-hmm. well, if that's something that worries you. Because there are, especially in the United States, there's so many different online banks to choose from. I know that here in Canada, it's a lot more limited as to like the banking options because it's a more regulated market. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so it's just something to think about. Think about where your money is and what your money is doing for you. And I know people don't love talking about money, and I know that it can be like a sensitive subject for people, but the more that you talk about it, the more that you learn about it, the better that you're going to feel about it. And then, you know, the more that it can grow for you.
I think what we're going to do for this podcast is we'll drop a poll down below, and we're going to throw in a couple of different options for you for how you leave your money in the bank. Do you invest it? Do you have no idea what you're doing and just want to learn more? Because we would love to talk more about this and learn more about it ourselves. So I think it's a great conversation starter, and, you know, we could get more people on the podcast to kind of help us out and help you guys out too with those financial endeavors.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, everybody's always looking for ways to make money on the road. And so if your money's making you money on the road, like, yeah, it might just be sitting in your bank account, but you get that thing at the end of the month and it's like you earn $15. It's like you got 15 free dollars for doing nothing, just having your money sitting in that bank account.
You know, it's like that saying, work smarter, not harder. I almost said work harder, not smarter. But seriously, though,
that's the saying about Sonny the Sun Raider. We are working hard, not smart.
I guess you're starting to work more smart, you know, but the thing is I definitely wish I could have like just gutted that whole thing and started from scratch. But hey, you know, that's where we are, and that's what we're doing, and we're getting it done. And, you know, at the end of the day, that rig now has a new engine in it, and it's going to look pretty damn spanking new and beautiful when we're done with it. So we'll put a price tag on it and, you know, either rent it out or try to sell it. And if you guys are interested, you let us know.
Yeah, I keep having these like visions of, so we're putting so much time and energy into like making it right and making it look nice and doing all of these things. And then I just have this like sinking feeling that whoever buys it is going to then like rip all that out.
And if they do, that's fine. I don't really care. But, you know, at the same go around, I hope that they look at it and go, damn, this is craftsmanship. This is great. This is beautiful. I love what you did.
Or even like for a while, like it's like, even if you decide to change something down the road or whatever, like, you know, enjoy it for a while.
Yeah,
whoever's going to buy it, whoever's out there, because like, we haven't really talked about what we're doing with the van afterwards. And so we're still figuring out exactly what the plan for Sunny the Sun Raider is.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so we hope that whoever's traveling in it, we're definitely going to travel in it a couple of times for sure. But we hope that whoever's rolling in it is enjoying it.
Yeah, I mean, because that's the whole point of it, right, is to be able to roll around, enjoy your life, enjoy wherever you're going, just have a great time. And hopefully we could give you guys a rig that you're not having any issues with, because we dealt with all of them.
Yeah, and we're dealing with them.
Yeah, we are.
Every day.
We're not turning a blind eye to any of them. We're going to make this thing fully capable to do anything that you need it to do.
Yeah. For sure.
Anything that a two-wheel drive vehicle could do.
Yeah. And we hope that you guys are taking the same care and love in your own van builds, because you know, it's easy to cut corners. It's always easier to just say, I don't want to deal with that. I'm just going to not. But it's always, always better to just like spend the time, spend the money, spend the hours and fix it.
OK, Alex, take your own advice on the spend the money part.
We've been spending a lot of money, right?
I know. But sometimes it's like, you know, we're like, do we want to spend the extra $500? And then we look at each other and we're like, well, maybe we should, you know? Yeah. We normally always come around to it, but I feel like at first it's a little difficult.
Yeah. When you see a price tag for something, you're like, ugh.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's not. We're trying to financially invest in ourselves and our projects so that way it comes out at the cream of the crop. And, you know, we have the best return at the end. And that was the whole point of this conversation that we just had.
Yeah, totally. You gotta put the work and time and whatever in to get it out on the back end. So,
well, we hope that you guys enjoyed this conversation. Please let us know in the comments below or leave a review for us. 5 stars would be great. And we'll definitely go ahead and talk about that review on the next podcast.
We hope you guys have an F&A day.
Hey, everybody knows it's true. Van life, YouTube channel, what they do. Everybody's got to get money. Everybody's about to get money. Make sure you subscribe to their YouTube channel, FNA Van Life. Over all that.